We're able to go. Okay, let's go ahead and hit the show. So this session is about what's new in .NET Framework 4.5. As you have seen in the news probably for the last 2-3 weeks, we've released a series of products, you know, from the build seminar upwards until now, where we release the preview of Visual Studio 11. We release also the 4.5 framework, as well as the preview for Windows 8. This session, I'm actually forbidden from talking about Windows 8. So there are certain portions or items that come in 4.5 that are specific for Windows 8. I'll briefly touch on them, but I can't really go into detail on that, because otherwise I'll have to go ahead and collect paycheck from somebody else but Microsoft. So I don't want that. All right, so let's hit it. So who's going to benefit from .NET 4.5? Let me get a raise of hands. Who in here is a C# or BV developer? All right. Who is a C++ developer? Okay. So who's going to benefit from this session? Everybody but that guy, and that guy. So BV and C# people are going to benefit the most from this. If you do manage C, you definitely benefit from somehow. People that do PowerShell, they're going to benefit from that, et cetera, et cetera. If you do F#, which again, I should probably mention them, although I don't really have mentioned that before. So the topics that I want to go ahead and cover here during this session is, again, what's new in 4.5. I'm going to touch briefly on the Windows 8 support. We have actually done a great job in this iteration of 4.5 to address some of the performance issues that we're seeing on 4.0. Going from a 3.5 to 4.0, you had to do some rewrite and some refactoring of the framework. And so they took the opportunity to, with this release, to make a lot of improvements on performance and just overall refactoring of the framework to be able to give you additional, you know, power when you go and have your applications. Even if you don't do anything, just be able to just transport that into from 4.0 to 4.5, you should see an increase in performance in your apps. There was definitely also a lot of improvements on data access, anything from the Entity Framework 4 to the use of async to be able to bring parallel information from one place and at the same time be able to do a correlation of business objects and such. And then last but not least, which I'm hoping to be able to touch in an hour, would be to talk about the top developer request, because there is actually such thing in the .NET framework where they actually gather your feedback about what you would like to see on the release of the .NET framework and things that they have actually improved on this release. So with that, by the time we leave, you have a great overview of what 4.5 provides for developers in this release, and which again, as I mentioned, right now is on CTP, and also to perhaps give you the incentive or the desire to start testing the waters on 4.5. We actually do need you guys to play with 4.5, to try to kick the tires around it, because we need to go ahead and iron out all the compatibility issues and all the things that you feel that perhaps are not up to par. So by the time that Visual Studio 11 releases, by the time that Windows 8 releases, we have listened to your demands and hopefully be able to make such changes. Okay, first of all, what I want to do is for level setting, I want to go ahead and talk about the framework. What is the framework exactly, the versions, and the point that I just touched a minute ago about compatibility, be able to garner the support from the development community to provide us with feedback and with you know, a muster of will to help us improve the product and be able to get it, you know, RTM as soon as possible. I'm also going to talk about a specific feature called .NET Framework 3.5 on demand, which is going to be part of the release of 4.5, which includes, as part of the thing, is when you have an application that requires 4.5 and is not embedded as part of the OS for whatever reason, that it actually pretends to be, and it just does the assumption or pretends to for your application that is 3.5, and is done that as needed on demand. And if there's a specific thing that needs to be actually be driven from 3.5, it will install that in the background and allow you to perform sex function. Quick reminder. I think I can browse through this real quick. What is that net? Again, what it covers is, again, is this area right here, which is the CLR. These are the base classes. This is where most of the work has been done. The class libraries, the garbage collection, security, the binders, the profiling, debugging, etc. And on top of that, we have all the different libraries that have been actually being added on top of it from, you know, from 1.0 forward, which is the workflow, ASP.NET, Windows Communication Foundation, Windows Presentation Foundation, and all the foundations, like Entity Framework, etc. So the idea is that on the 4.5 version, there was a lot of work done around this area, and also some work on some specific areas, such as the Entity Framework, ASP.NET, WCF. Again, the purpose of it was to be improvement in performance, and also for the opportunity to actually rewrite and refactor some of those things that needed work from 4.0. We started with Net version 1.0 in 2002. 2003, 1.1, 2.0 in 2005, and then we went to 3.0. 3.0, what we refer to is Net 1.0, 1.1, and 2.0 were side by side. Meaning that you could have one or both or three of them installed pretty much at the same time, and they were really a leap on technology from one to the next. Whereas when we got to 3.0, it was really an adaptation or an additive release. Pretty much you built on the base of a release and you added additional functionality, which in the case of 3.0 and 3.5 was the Windows Presentation Foundation, the WCF, etc. And then, of course, you had 3.5. And then in 2010, we released 4.0, which was, again, a complete side-to-side release. We kind of implemented all the changes that were on the additive into what was 4.0. In 4.5, we do that again, which is an additive or in-place update. So the versions is an in-place update. Again, you can change it to pretty much any OS window that is supported today, Windows 7, Windows 2008, 2000R2. And of course, it's going to be a part of Windows 8 when it releases. And also for any other OSs like Vista and so forth, they will be actually presented as part of a Windows update. Okay, so some of the things that they would like to actually start doing. Actually, hold on a second, Romina, did I go too fast? No, I didn't. Some of the things or areas that they work was around bug fixes again, and this is performance improvements and internals. And what I mean by that is, in bug fixes is where you actually start developing your code and you find a specific thing that is actually, you're expecting a specific exception on the framework, for example, but you know it's a bug, so you correct and address that deficiency on the .NET framework and say, okay, fine, I know that the framework does this, so I'm going to go ahead and catch this exception and manage it this way. Well, and the compatibility in place, what we're trying to do is, okay, let's look at what kind of bugs have been identified by also our users and actually worked around it or find a work around it so that we don't break their code. Because if we actually fix those bugs now, they're going to go ahead and have, you know, problems with their code. So that's one of the things that we actually started doing with bug fixes, also to start looking at the overall impact that it would have on end users. Because they have actually taken the errors or the exceptions and worked around them. Again, performance improvements is, again, sometimes they had to look into areas where they said, okay, let's go ahead and improve the garbage collector, for example, and said, if we do that, perhaps we're going to get increase in performance on this area, but we also have to take a look at what are our users doing, or the people that use the framework, that could impact, and instead of having a positive performance, it's going to have a decreased performance. So, and then the other one is the internals, people that have dependency on internals of a .NET framework, where they say, okay, let's make sure that whatever dependency they have in our internals still works, it's not going to have too much impact or no impact at all for our users. So the way we've been doing that is by doing some compatibility labs. We've taken code from all over the world, from people that have submitted it, to be part of our test labs, where we actually run continuously the review of every bug fix. Every time there is a new feature or a new addition to the release, we do a continuous unit testing of all the different applications for compatibility, make sure that nothing has been broken from one release to the next. Make sure that the features that are added to the .NET framework do not impact adversely any kind of compatibility with the applications. And then make sure to run for common problems that happen in the .NET framework. One thing, as I mentioned before, is we need your help. We definitely need your assistance and be able to make sure that we get the best product to you guys when the RTMs. So we have a call to action. We have a big favor to ask, which is try download the 4.5 framework and try it on your 4.0 app. Just try to go ahead and run it and change the scope to 4.5. Make sure if it works. If it doesn't, let us know exactly what's wrong with it. Again, it's extremely important. How many people here have 3.5 as their core base for application development? Okay. Wow. Okay. I expect a little more, but it's a good thing. For you guys, I mean, what we're asking from you is even more, which, again, try to run it into 4.0 and then into 4.5. And if it works in 4.0 and doesn't work in 4.5, let us know immediately also so that we can go ahead and try to correct those issues. For source compatibility also, I mean, make sure that the code that you have on 3.5 or 4.0, when you recompile it on 4.5, that it's actually doing what it's supposed to do. Make sure that the compiler is actually doing the right thing. Serialization, that's an area that is also very, very keen to Microsoft. And that is, again, when you have client and server communication, either via the Windows communication framework or in another way, we want you to help us make sure that when we do the serialization of objects in the .NET framework, that those are exactly what you expect from server to client and vice versa. Okay. So what is .NET 3.5 on demand? .NET 3.5 on demand is it's a feature in 4.5 that allows you to use very specific areas or features of the .NET framework to make your system be able to work accordingly as if it was working on 3.5, making it think that it's still under the 3.5 realm. And the reason behind it is, again, because you don't want to go ahead and have to download 3.5 and 4.0. If the machine, for example, is a Windows 2008 R2 and it contains the .NET 4.5 framework, it would be undesirable sometimes for IT organizations to say, oh, guess what, you have to install also 3.5 as part of your deployment. So here's a disk that's going to add another 40 megs to your file, plus if you do any compilation ASP.NET, that's going to go ahead and increase considerably. So what we do is, in the option is, on demand, when the .NET framework identifies that a function that is being required is 3.5, it immediately tries to install the MS. Let's say, for example, your application is going to try to install the MSI version, let's say on XP. the OS detects that and the framework detects that and says, you're trying to install 3.5. Let me go ahead and figure out what exactly are you trying to accomplish with 3.5 and present that to you, if I'm able to offer that to you on the 3.5 version of our calls. And so what it does is it goes through the code, analyzes, and if it's able to perform the functions for the program successfully, it will pretend to be that, and it will record that as part of the OS. If it's unable to do that, it will try to install just those portions or sections of the 3.5 MSI that are needed to be able to perform the task so that your program is able to run. Okay, and then of course you have the edge cases, which is a case where it definitely you were using some 3.5 core things, and it must do that. So you need to install 3.5. In that case, it is actually going to go ahead and show you a little window like you see right here that says we need to go ahead and install these changes for 3.5.1. You accept or reject the changes. In that case, it's going to go ahead and try to install that. So again, it's to try to minimize the number of installs, the number of side-by-side versions of the framework that you need on your machine to be able to perform and be able to have things in production. Okay. Any questions so far? None? Oh, thank you. Yes, that's a great question. Yes, absolutely. So right now you have all the intermediate. I'm sorry. Let me repeat the question for everybody who wasn't able to listen. The question is, when he's installing some of the CTPs at this time, he's getting asked or inquired about which version does he want to install. Is it 4.01, 4.02 CTP, etc. And right now it's a lot of chaos. It's a lot of moving parts. You have the async CTP. You have the Entity Framework CTP, MVC4 CTP. Don't let me tell you about that. So all those, at one point, when it's getting close to release to manufacturer, they will be combined as part of the release. So at this time, as you're doing that, again, you're going to have variances because you have different product groups releasing at different timelines. But at one point, they have to go back and converge into that release for RTM. So yes, when you do that final release of 4.5 and say, okay, I don't want to see any CTP requests anymore, and that will not happen. So thanks. Well, thank you. Any additional questions? Nope. Okay. So how many people here has installed Windows 8? 1, 2, 3. Wow. Okay. Excellent. Well, I do encourage you to try it. It's actually extremely cool, especially if you have a table or a pad. But a lot of the efforts on 4.5 are also focused towards the next release of Windows. And again, I'm very limited on what I'm able to talk, but I will briefly touch on 3 points, which is about the Windows runtime. Again, it's a new library that is coming as part of the release of Windows 8 that provides you a much easier, elegant, and faster way of doing things that you were used to in, you know, the API in Windows before. So if you had to go and call P code or anything like that, you know, trying to figure out what the pointer is for a call, and you get that exception error, you know what I'm talking about. So those are going to be phased out eventually. So the Windows runtime is sort of the first step towards that vision. I'm also going to talk about the .NET for Metro style application API, and again with the new release of Windows 8, we have a new user experience that allows you to do things that flow a lot better, a lot faster, and a lot richer than on the on prior releases. And also talk about portable libraries. So for for C Sharp and BB developers, the use of the Windows runtime is going to be extremely natural. It's going to be almost as if you were using a .NET library, but I want to make the caveat. Do not think for a minute that the Windows runtime is going to replace the .NET framework. because that's also been mentioned or talked in conversations, and they're completely separate from one another. It's a completely different focus. Again, one of us is focused on the operating system, the other one is focused on applications. But to look at this code, if I wanted to go ahead and make use of the Windows storage, I can go and simply open my user interface, my IDE, and start using the Windows storage. And if you notice, it's very similar to using a library or a class on C Sharp. Then I can go ahead and select the picker, which is an object on the Windows runtime, but it abstracts and it looks as if it was a .NET .NET framework class. This specific file open picker has a collection, and you can also go through the collection, Windows runtime collections, as if they were part of .NET. So again, if you want to make use of that, it's going to be extremely simple and extremely easy to do. So it's they wanted to make it as natural as possible to you to migrate and start making use of the Windows runtime. Another thing that they did for Windows 8 is to create the new user experience library for making use of the Metro style applications. And in this one, what they did is they went a top to bottom cleanup of user experience API to make sure that it was very lightweight. And I want to really emphasize the lightweight, very simple, and also that it didn't have any duplication with the Windows runtime, with the Windows OS, or with anything else. So they wanted to make sure that there was no four ways of doing things, which again we usually see in some of our libraries where you're able to do things four different ways. So there's definitely no duplication on the Windows with the Windows runtime API. And if you've been developing on XAML and or Windows Form and everything, it will be almost as simple as doing that. Again, this is the last slide, I think. No. Two more. The Metro and the WinRT are completely separate. So you would have your application sit up on top of the .NET framework. You have your library for .NET for Metro apps. You have your CLR. This would be your application that leverages or taps into the Windows runtime APIs and the Windows 32 APIs, which are encompassed into Windows. So again, two completely separate entities. With portable libraries, this is another feature that they've actually included as part of the this interim release. And what that does is if you create any kind of application that has, for example, a model view model approach, you can leverage your application almost like a write once, run anywhere for a Windows Phone, Silverlight, desktop, and Xbox. So you can create really with this portable libraries. You will have to change your view model, of course, but most of your contracts and everything will remain the same. Your device interaction will be the same between Windows 8 and other devices like your Windows Phone. So that, again, from a productivity perspective as a developer, it helps you increase your development time. Reduce your development time and be able to increase your potential to target multiple platforms. Okay. Any questions on Windows 8? No. Uh-oh. Okay. Sorry?
Do you see code contracts in .NET 4.5?
In 4.5, yes. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. although I'm actually perhaps... it's coming on the slide. You're getting a little ahead of me. So thanks. Now... one of the areas, as I mentioned, besides the usability for Windows 8, is also to improve on existing libraries to create better performance for them. And within that, some of the areas that they concentrated to their work was around the async programming, which again, how many here has leveraged the asynchronous programming on their applications? Oh, wow. Again, so this allows you to scale up considerably. I mean, if you're looking at performance improvements, or you're trying to really get the most juice out of your application, I would definitely suggest you start looking at asynchronous programming. The other area is again on the use of parallel programming, which I hope that many people do parallel programming. One person, two person. Wow. Can I have three? Can I have four? So there were definitely additional libraries and functions that increased to be able to help you make use of parallel programming. Again, with the new processors that are coming out on the laptops and the devices on the servers, it makes sense to start making use of it at its fullest, which is again try to spread out the work across the cores and the processors. Improvements again on the CLR garbage collection. That's one of the areas that they also improve, as well as on the ASP ASP.NET startup. Again, for the people that have done any application that do asynchronous, this is the await command, which in this specific case allows you allows your code to be most responsive. I mean, how many people has actually done and clicking a button and have to see the circle of death go on and on and on and on, and you actually see the little top of the window say not responding, and then 45 seconds later, a minute later, maybe two, you see it come back. I see that happen a lot with Outlook, but you know, I won't say anybody. But the idea is that by making use of asynchronous programming, you can have that thread go and work and have your application, your UI be more responsive so it doesn't block. So you actually have the user interact with your application as it's continuing to do things in the background. The other thing that allows you to do is to enable to perform retrieval or update of information in parallel. So you perhaps have two different data sources that you need to go ahead and tap an SAP area and perhaps a database, a local database. So with asynchronous development, you can actually go and launch a thread that is going to go ahead and be responsive, and at the same time, go and fetch the information from one area, from the other one, compiles it, puts it together, and presents it to you. So in this specific one, example, we are actually doing a display of information that is retrieving information from two different areas. So it's going and actually fetching information, the picture from one area. It's fetching the address from another database. And then getting the user phone contact information from a third place. Now, by doing the await task, I'm telling in this specific case, when all of my tasks are done, then we're going to go ahead and display the image, the telephone number, and the address information for the person. And it's actually done in parallel. The other thing is it leverages the threads better. So in the case of await, what it does, it actually goes... The biggest impact of an application, besides garbage collection, is also the instantiation of threads. And so what this does is actually leverage existing threads that have already been created to be able to perform additional tasks and again, not have the ramp-up time, which is what causes a lot of the time for applications to kind of slow down. And on the server code and the server area is you used to have a, for example, on ASP.NET, a thread per request. By doing await or asynchronous, the thread is actually liberated or is taken aback to perform certain tasks. And whenever the task is done, a new thread from the pool is actually brought back and instantiated to perform the function after everything has been completed based on the task that you actually want to do. There's a great hands-on lab that if you're interested in doing as part of the build when Windows the Windows 8 preview or the build preview came out, And it's out on the web. You can actually download everything, and it allows you to do the asynchronous programming for both Visual Basic and C#. So I would encourage you to try that. Another area, and again, I apologize for the slide. This is the slide deck of death. It's killing me too when I was building it. But the parallel programming, as I mentioned, it used to be data first, and now do computation. Now you're able to do computation as well as retrieval of data to be able to join things for results in a more native way or in a much more flowing way that you were able to do in 4.0. So now it's you were able to do data is first. Now let me go ahead and do the computation. Now you can say data and computation are pretty much in tandem. Here's your data. Questions? Nope. Yes, sir. So the question is if that will be available for Silverlight, and the answer is yes. The answer is yes for that one. Yes. So that specific area of the framework, it is available for Silverlight. That was actually one interesting that you mentioned that specific question. Actually, I asked him to ask me that question before I came in. No, but it was actually asked as part of the internal calls because again, the support for Silverlight, they wanted to make sure that they had some of this flexibility on that platform. So again. I won't bore you to death with some of the tasks that you can do is when all are done, when any of them are done, delayed specific number of seconds before you actually come back. Please cancel the task if it's done after so many, if it's not done after 120 seconds, cancel the whole task and revert back to everything. So you can actually do that. I mean, just imagine the powerful thing you can do with some of those tasks is you can actually sort of create a little I would say a workflow for threads that you can say, go at launch, let me know when it comes back. I don't really care. I'm going to go ahead and continue doing my processing, perhaps launching more batch processes. And whenever you're done, I'll go ahead and take care of that. And again, it just performs just faster. There were several that were already part of 4.0. There has been an increase on additional tasks for you to be able to leverage. How many ASP developers, ASP.NET developers, not ASP, ASP.NET developers in the house? Okay. And for you guys, I mean, when you're doing a startup or ramp up of IIS servers and you have to actually wait for that garbage collection or you have things in memory and trying to release those things and you see that memory just grow and grow and grow and you have to talk to the guy in IT and say, hey, I need more memory. Why? I'm not releasing the objects. I need to go ahead and get more memory. That's the way that works. Well, they've made actually almost a full rewrite. Actually, no, it's not almost. It's a full rewrite of the garbage collection for the server side on 4.5. As I mentioned to you in the beginning, 4.5 is a stack on, but in many areas and many instances, is also a side-by-side. And that's one of the areas where they say, we need to definitely tackle this. If we want to go ahead and continue to make our customers happy, we need to rewrite the garbage collector for a server. The way they did it is actually they refactor a lot of the code internally. If you had a big set of session objects, the way the garbage collector used to work is used to climb up the whole tree and then check everything. And if it was actually available, then it will continue using it. Otherwise, it tried to release it. So it had to walk a lot of objects to be able to determine what was going to be garbage collected or not. They redesigned and improved the tree the algorithm for marking the blocks of garbage collector a lot faster. And again, so you don't have that kind of choke because you can actually tell or see when IIS was doing garbage collector because kind of everything comes to a little mini pause. You kind of see it kind of chug along and then all of a sudden pages come back real fresh and real fast. So in this one, you're going to see the pause is going to be a lot shorter and also the manageability of objects that get collected are going to be a lot better. Better use of large heap objects in heap and then balancing across processes, which was not done before. For the life of me, that's another thing that just strikes me as interesting. We've been having multiple processors for many many years, and it was single processor base, basically. So now it's okay. Let's go ahead and leverage all the processors to be able to do garbage collection as well. Oh, did I hit something? Startup of ASP.NET is also a lot faster, up to 35%. And that's, again, by making use of multi-core just-in-time compilation. And they looked at different things. They looked at things like doing the NGen and everything else, and it turned out to be a little bit too much. It was not possible to do. So the best thing is, let's try to leverage the cores or all the processors to do the JIT and be able to get to start a lot faster. Again, and from a cold start to running, it's up to 35% faster. Okay. Any questions about the ins and outs, or shall I continue with the entity framework? Wow, very quiet. I got everyone's attention, or everybody's thinking about the 5:30 train. Okay, so, Developer workflows. Again, for Entity Framework users, the first release of the Entity Framework that we release has been about model first. You create your diagram, you generate your classes from your diagram, and so everything is based around that diagram. That diagram is worth gold, right? So that's when you create a new database, and everything is done from there. And then you have also the option on designer-centric when you have your database and you do some reverse engineering and it creates your diagram, right? And then you also have your code-centric, which is where we're trying to move a little bit more on the next release of Entity Framework, where you define your classes and mappings in code. And then based on that, the Entity Framework is going to go ahead and create your database and your model or your diagram for you. And that's, again, for a new database. And for an existing database, it defines the classes or creates the classes for you and maps it to the existing database. And then it creates your entity model or entity diagram model for you. So this is what we're actually trying to go into the next release of 4.5 with the Entity Framework. And I hope, is Entity Framework one of the areas that you guys just love? I mean, let me see hands of people that are actually doing using the Entity Framework. Wow. Okay, so ADO.NET. Wow, okay. ADO. So, again, some of the areas that improve is in making in the use of enums, migration from one entity framework to the next, be able to do a better use of stored procedures that do batching. Again, that was one of the biggest requests we had because, again, we have this, I wouldn't say legacy, but this established database community that likes to work things on batch a lot on SQL Server. And, you know, if you talk to a DBA, the database is the center of the world. And everything should be done on the database. You should compute things on database, etc. If you talk to a developer, you know, it's the other way around. So, you know, somewhere in the middle is where you have to be, right? So what we did is we actually improved on the use of stored procedures on Entity Framework, as well as in the use of the batch and the multi the use of stored procedures that return multiple result sets as well. So the other one is to be able to make use of the new Azure and SQL Server technologies like geospatial, table valued functions, stored procedures that return multiple sets. And in performance, now you can have actually multiple diagrams per model. They can be federated as well. With the use of Azure, you can actually have multiple diagrams that actually refer to each other, which was not possible in the past. And the use of link queues are compiled by default In version 4.0, 4.1, you have to actually declare that you want the link queue compiled. And for life of me, I mean, I'm glad that they got this, because a lot of performance issues that we see when we go to customer sites is around the fact that why is my query performing so slowly? Well, because actually you're not compiling it, or the entity framework is not compiling it. And the response is like, why didn't you guys compile it before? I mean, why do we have to actually set this flag? It should be as a default. So again, it's that feedback that comes back to Redmond and says, fix it. And they got it done. So on the ADR.NET, better use for null compression, for support of high availability. If you have servers that are in disparate sources, the only thing you have to do is declare them the connection string, and they will be able to do high availability as a default. You don't have to do anything else. If one of them fails, it's going to know exactly where to go based on the connection string and be able to attack that specific server. So it's one of the areas that actually I've seen that internally in the demo, and it's extremely cool, because you have to do all kinds of things. If you want to do a failover with ADR.NET, right now you have to create all these lines of code and all these different tasks to be able to accomplish that. So we have actually done that as part of the .NET framework. Support for asynchronous, of course. We need to go ahead and make scalability. On WCF, we actually improve on streaming. We improved on the use of UDP multi-channel, and again, on the configuration. That's an area that again, as a WCF developer, I still struggle. I think that we're not quite there yet, but they're definitely looking into getting improved, which is how to configure my endpoints, how to configure my services on WCF. It's still a bit painful. So tracing and everything else. One big improvement on the network area, when talking about communication, is the use of WebSockets. WebSockets allows you to have bidirectional communication. And it's a new standard. It's actually not something Microsoft came out. It's something Microsoft collaborated with W3C and IETF to allow constant communication between two entities, whether it's a client or a server. And again, in the past, you had to actually do things very cumbersome, like keep alive, for example, where you had your connection just keep going and pinging each other to death. And this one is a little more UDP based, where you actually have interaction between both and have things like, for example, stock tickers or SMS messages or some sort of communication in a two-way fashion. The unfortunate thing is right now the only way to be able to leverage it is it'll be in IE10, or if you do any Metro apps. ASP.NET, you should be able to do that if you actually create a client, but it's the current implementation is very limited, again, because of the CTP. They hope that by the time that it's released, they will have additional set of clients that can actually interact with it. No questions. Wow, very quiet. In performance, one of the things that we did is the licensing of the ribbon. Now you're able to pretty much do it. I guess there was a problem, and I never recall why they weren't able to allow a licensing of the ribbon, but now it's able to be done. Now improvements on MVVM, improvements on WPF, which again that's an area that I think they still need to work a little more personally, but they've actually have improved. Make improvements on that. But the area that I actually saw the best performance, and that kind of blew me away personally, was on the load of items. If you ever tried to load, 20,000 items to a list, or try to load it, after 7 minutes, you run out of memory. I mean, have you guys experienced that before? I know I have. I mean, especially when you're talking about people that has, thousands and thousands of records, and they want to put them in the list, which for the life of me, I don't know why, but they do it. It used to be that you run out of memory in seven minutes, so they actually redesigned that, and they went to bat to the point where now you can load up to 200,000 records in 24.5 seconds. That was on the sprint. These are development sprints. So it went from being several minutes to 25 seconds, which was almost 7 minutes. So reduction in that is considerable, a really big performance. On the next iteration, they actually say, you know, this is good, but it's not good enough. Let's go ahead and try it. So in the next iteration of the sprint for loading objects, they got 200,000 objects in a list in 2.3 seconds. So that's a huge chunk. So think about the performance improvement that you're able to get with that. And that's, again, by making use of libraries like async and implement those as part of the framework. In workflow, we were able to finally have C# expressions on workflow. For the people that have done workflow in the past, if you're a C# developer and you were doing workflow development, you had to do an expression. You had to actually go back to BB, which, you know, it was like, you know, almost a sacrilege for people. Like, oh, I need to go back. So you're able to do that now. Better performance of state machines. So there we go. Contract for services, for which you were not able to do on the workflow. Better interaction or better performance, better interaction with the user interface of the IDE, which means better integration with Visual Studio, and just overall better usability. They actually went to the to redesign some of the SAML parsing engine to be a little more responsive. Improvements on memory, again, for bigger. This is one thing that actually they did, is for compression. If you actually do compression of objects, if you do objects that are very big, upwards of 2 gigs in size, they actually had improvements on those as well. If you do managed entity framework on that, you're able to make use of generics, POCO, and be able to leverage that, which was not available in the past. And so you're able to make use of POCO features on MEF now. And that was a big one. ASP.NET, better performance improvements, HTML5 templates. Again, that's a new thing. If you are an ASP developer or a web developer, with your salt, you definitely start looking into ASP HTML5. They make use of Canvas, they make use of the multimedia, a lot richer way of managing the content online than on prior versions of HTML. So that's actually supported, fully supported. On 2010, right now, we do have certain support for it, and we're able to do it, but it's still also part of the CTP. I think in the next release, when we actually have the engine, which has been improved for doing that. Now, as a default, you have a cross-site scripting blocker. So if you're trying to secure your code, somebody trying to go ahead and drop your database by putting SQL code inside your HTML, those things are actually caught by the .NET framework. Any questions about .NET, ASP, anything? Again, just to recap, and again, I apologize for the PowerPoint to death, but unfortunately for me, several of the demos that I wanted to do were pretty much vetoed by corporate, where I said, you know, you do that, you might as well just turn your badge and walk home. And home is a little too far, it's Texas, so be quite a drive for me. So just to recap, .NET 4.5 is a very rich update that's going to help improve developers on performance, in scalability, and in productivity. That's one of the areas that I think that is going to help you. They try to make it as compatible as possible with prior releases. We do need your help on App Compat. Please download the preview and help us debug. The other area that we actually have made improvements is around the use of the Metro style applications for both C# and BB. If you have not downloaded the build 8, do so. Again, it's worth downloading and actually playing with the next release. Especially if you have anything that is, you know, like touch device. I mean, they have some amazing 12-inch or 10-inch pad for almost next to nothing, and you can run in that device, and it's amazing just being able to wiggle that thing. So, and again, on 4.5, there were a lot of improvements made in performance on ASP.NET and garbage collector, and what else? Asynchronous programming, which again allows you to make your application a lot faster. And I think that overall, the asynchronous framework or the synchronous programming or libraries that were part of the framework is what made a lot of these things happen. So without them, without the actual use of parallel programming and asynchronous, I think that we wouldn't be able to get to the numbers that they're showing us. Again, if you do web development or any kind of things, I encourage you to start looking at WebSockets, the code first in the Entity Framework, and several of the new SQL features. With that, I'll leave the rest of the time. We've got about 10 minutes for questions, if there are any.